If you want to be clean, stylish, and might I also say dandy, then you'd listen to my next guest, because I'm delighted to say that I'm going to be joined by Timothy Everest. Now, Boy Wanted on Savile Row is the memoir that charts the evolution of British tailoring over the past four decades, starting in the 80s, when Timothy Everest studied under the rebel of Savile Row, the great Tommy Nutter. I'm delighted to say that joining me live on the line, the man who has dressed everybody from Ralph Fiennes to Beckham, and put the star on the gentleman, I am doffing my cap, and I am wearing one, to my next guest, Timothy Everest. Timothy, good morning to you.
Hello.
Hello, Timothy. Are you? So I gave you that great intro, and then there's nobody there. Hello, Timothy.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're live. You see, it's always the way with live radio. You give the big bit. If I just said Timothy Everest on the line, then that would have been fine. But because I gave you this introduction, of course, you weren't going to be there. How are you this morning, sir?
Very well, thank you. It's a beautiful sunny morning.
And whereabouts are you today? Are you somewhere above Savile Row? Whereabouts are you this morning?
Home today, on the way to work in an hour or so.
Marvellous.
The line's breaking up again.
Yeah, it was just a little bit. Let's just keep persevering and see if we can persevere. Otherwise, we may have to go to plan B, whatever that is. Tell me a little bit then about... Well, let's I won't start at the beginning. I'll go where we are now, because the past... We had the metrosexual movement, we had Britpop, and now we seem, with things like The Gentleman, etc., if you're back in that men dressing sharply but conservatively. We're not on the shoulder pads you could land a jump jet on anymore.
No, you're not back to the 80s and Joan Collins kind of look. We call it kind of red carpet. What's happened kind of post-COVID that people have gone back to wanting to be casual but elegant? You know, we went through a sort of phase of Zoom calls, Netflix to the pub, and sort of kind of giving up on dressing up. And when guys sort of particularly going back to sort of work were thinking, well, I don't really want to wear a suit, I've become comfortable, then we've been sort of mining that kind of casual but elegant look. So I think things like early films like American Gigolo with people like Richard Gere, that sort of like softer, easier, more fluid looks, maybe wearing your trousers on your waist rather than down by your hips, rolling your shirt sleeves up and things like that. But it really is quite an interesting sort of a time at the moment where people are looking to be, as I say, a bit more elegant.
How did you get into tailoring? Because those who don't know Tommy Nutter, can you just give us the quick, the genius that was Tommy? This is the man, correct me if I'm wrong, who designed the famous purple suit for Jack Nicholson in the original Batman, wasn't it?
Yeah, but also I answered an advert, which is on the front of the book that we've just done, which was Boy Wanted on Savile Row, which is, I think, that. A bit of a euphemism anyway, but I turned up to meet this guy and he said, do you know anything about me? And it was pre-internet. And I said, of course I do. And he said, no, you don't. And he pulled out his sort of portfolio. And the first image there was of Abbey Road with the Beatles all walking across the junction there. And all of them were wearing his clothes except for George Harrison. He said he could always be a bit difficult. So that was a bit of an eye-opener because I was looking for a job in fashion. I'd worked for my uncle who was a tailor. And then I realized that Tommy was a very fashionable tailor. So he literally dressed everybody from the Beatles to Elton John to Mick Jagger, the Stones. And he was starting his business again. That's when I joined him. And it was a great experience because I went from Little League to the Premiership working with him.
And of course, we're talking fashionable, but we're not talking disposable fashion. And Savile Row has that fine tradition of tailoring. Hardy Ames, what is it? Now, correct me as I get this completely wrong. What is it? A gentleman should take great care of choosing a suit, putting it on, and then should wear it like he's forgotten he's wearing it, or something along those lines?
Yeah, well, we always say to people, basically people say, you look really well. That's a nice suit, rather than have you gone and bought something. It should be an expression of yourself. And having something tailored is very, very different from buying off the peg. One of the things that when people have things made for the first time, they put it on. And I remember being, very careful at the beginning and wanting to please people. And they'd be standing in the mirror there going, what's this like? And I said, what's it feel like? I said, it fits really, really well. It feels like my suit. And that's a very, very important thing. And you say about disposable, the great thing about tailoring, it isn't a particularly bespoke, it really is a serious investment at the beginning. It should never be elitist, but I guess it's kind of exclusive. But the sense of something that actually will last a long time, very well-known restaurateur has just reopened a very famous restaurant again recently. When he first came to me 30 years ago, he said, now, Tim, how long is this suit going to last? And I said, well, Mr. So-and-so, it'll last, at least 10 years. is thinking, well, cheap young salesman. We made him his 30th anniversary suit last year. They do really, really last if you look after them.
Yeah, indeed. And another thing, I suppose, is if you invest, and I use the word invest as you have done, because it is something that you will wear, you know, for a very long time indeed. It just shows that you're comfortable in your own skin, doesn't it? Because you're not a vagary to the things of fashion. So whereas you can go out and you can go, and I'm sitting in a studio, which is 10 minutes from Puerto Banús, and you'll see every sort of haute couture name you want to have there, and you can be as flashy as you want to be. But if you're comfortable, if you've got your own style, your own image, then, you know, the tailored suit absolutely speaks with that quiet but stylish confidence.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, that's an interesting point. About years ago when we first started again, journalists would ask you, what are you wearing this season? What's the brand you're wearing? And I always used to say, well, what are you wearing? And they'd say, why? And I said, well, you know, we're different sizes, different ages. Why would we all wear the same thing? And one of the things I've always said, the only way to be modern, because everything has kind of been done, every kind of style has been covered, and you know, dress like an Edwardian gentleman or a punk rocker, and no one would kind of look because it's kind of already done, is the only way to be something we're seeing more and more with a lot of the younger generation. We have a lot of customers coming in from the Middle East and Asia. And, you know, I said to one of them, we've been making this kind of deconstructed kind of Peaky Blinders meets early 80s Comme des Garçons on it. You can imagine what that might look. Very black anyway. And I said to him, do you not go to Bond Street? Do you not buy these brands? And he said, well, why would I buy brands that other people could wear? And why would I pay an awful lot of money for things that are expensive but not very good quality? And then you've got a generation, it's very niche, but you've got people actually saying things like that. It's quite an interesting time for people like myself.
Yeah, and also there's that great, you do mention Peaky Blinders, and you think of the things like the Sweeney Todd films, and also tearing over it, sort of Guy Ritchie's stuff. But, you know, the gentleman at the moment, that's whenever I turn on my social media feed, there are gentleman bits here and there. And again, well-dressed, waistcoats, sort of three-quarter-length coats. I mean, this is stuff, that, you know, and well-made boots. This is sort of stuff that, you know, you feel good, you put it on, and it, you know, clothes, manners maketh man, but clothes can also make the gentleman.
Yeah, definitely. And funny enough, we're doing a podcast, somebody yesterday, and we're talking about the influence of things like The Gentleman. And it's very interesting in that Guy Ritchie series where they've chosen with the lead character to dress him in the country sort of style, but by adding a dark shirt and a different kind of dark sort of tie, it's actually making it look a little bit more comfortable, more contemporary, possibly a little bit more dangerous. But yeah, films and things like, as you know, we worked on many of them, have real influence on how people want to dress. And constantly men will reference the obvious things, Steve McQueen, Sean Connery, so on. And things like The Gentleman, and they'll be inspired.
You've been doing this for a while now. I mean, the press notes that I got said when you first started, with people like, you know, Boy George and Steve Strange. Now, that's New Romantic, that's the Blitz Club, and that's a very, you know, after a reaction to punk, a reaction to sort of the more sort of psychedelic wear. Did that have an influence on tailoring in the 80s? And if we can continue that timeline through to the Britpop revival, you know, with Oasis and Bowie, who was a chameleon, obviously, and getting dressed differently all the time.
Yeah, but definitely I was inspired by people like David Bowie. I didn't go to university. I sort of flunked all my education. So going to clubs like the Blitz Club and Club for Heroes, Camden Palace, all those things, Mud Club, that was my university, really. Actually, you had to go out to see what was going on. There were a few magazines, I think New Sounds, New Styles, The Face. You didn't have the internet. So we talk about that quite often. It's that club culture was a very, very important part for sort of certainly my generation, a bit afterwards and before, because you could actually sort of get a feeling for what was going on. It's very interesting that my journey to London was, I was living in Wales at the time, was from some guys I met with who were down in Wales, and they say, well, come up to the Run Runner in Birmingham. And that's how we met people like Duran Duran. And then they say, come up to Leeds. And you come to London, and each sort of city had its own take on what a star was. So the New Romantic was quite an interesting one. So we were kind of referencing the past, maybe the bright young things from the 1920s, and kind of deconstructing that. And there was TV series, things like Brideshead Revisited, where they were looking at sort of this sort of traditional kind of clothing, but wearing a different way, maybe a bit oversized, a bit more flamboyant. So it was a way of actually putting a look together, which I think is quite difficult these days for people because they have to go onto the internet. So putting looks together is very, very important. You mentioned that
because I just remember, and I was in London in the 80s or 90s, and you'd get ID magazine to see what people were wearing, and that would give you ideas. Yeah. So you didn't get it immediately. So you took those few pictures that you saw in the clubbing pages. You thought, okay, I can do something with this, and then you develop that look. Nowadays, obviously, on straight onto the social media, and literally within an hour, everybody's wearing the same thing.
Yeah, that's very important. That's not a bad thing, because actually it helps a lot of people actually put things together. But actually, to be individual, really, you actually have to work out how you wear that yourself. You were talking about how that kind of segued. I mean, we moved into then, I guess, house music was the big thing then, which actually wasn't about dressing up. It's being comfortable and having a good time. But then when we came around to our business, I was kind of fascinated at the time, because people in tailoring were generally wearing a looser, easier fit, which is kind of on trend now. And it was all looking a little bit sort of tired. So we were sort of kind of looking back to the 60s to films like Thomas Crown Affair, which is a bit hackney now, North by Northwest, obviously the Bond sort of franchise. So what we started to do is try and promote British style. And that's what I was really interested in. How can we actually make people look at British tailoring a new way? So we had to appeal to a customer who was buying designer brands to think of as British tailoring as being a great alternative. So referencing sort of films and cutting our clothes a little bit neater, dressing people a bit more stylishly, led to a start of a very interesting business. And also something that we did with a fantastic girl called Alison Hargreaves, where we created what we called the New Bespoke Movement, which eventually became myself, Oswald Boateng and Richard James. But it really was trying to champion all things British.
Yeah, I was about to say, because we talk about all the cutthroat world of, and I'm not meaning to make a pun on that last one, but the cutthroat world of haute couture, etc., and you know, various houses. But I was about to say, your relationship with other houses like Oswald Boateng and Richard and perhaps, you know, Paul Smith, these guys who've and men and women have gone out and come up with this new bespoke movement. Now, do you look at each other and go, okay, I can see where you're going with that, and I might use. I mean, is it a good relationship? Are you all sort of pushing in the same direction and not so bitchy, but you know what I'm trying to get at here.
Yeah, no, I know what you're getting at. No, I hope I've always got on with people and always actually respected what other people do. I think it's very, very important that competition is very healthy, let's put it that way, as long as you have a point of difference and you need to help each other. Part of the mission we had, tailoring was dying. We needed more people to be tailoring. Fortunately, people like Oswald and Richard were thinking the same thing at the same time. So it was just about joining the dots and putting it together. And then we have to thank people like Sir Paul Smith. You know, if it wasn't for Sir Paul, there wouldn't be me. And then if it wasn't for Tommy, there wouldn't be maybe Paul and so on. It's a generational thing. I mean, you know, Paul Smith is, if we are a nation of shopkeepers, he must be the greatest. You know, that's one of the things that I think we were quoted years ago about him. But yeah, he was a great inspiration for me, Sammy.
And so how did you keep your cool when somebody like a Bowie or, you know, the next big thing in Britpop or Ralph Fiennes comes in and says, because these people are icons, saying, you know, I'd like a suit, please?
It's quite a difficult thing. But the thing I realise, I'm just from a normal background, and most of these people are as well. And, you know, particularly now with social media, I've been around some very famous people where people rush up to them and take a selfie and don't even engage. They're actually seeing the person through the phone, not actually talking, saying, hi, how are you? How's the family? What are you doing here? Oh, you're very, you know, cool. I really like you, whatever. So I've always tried to be quite sort of normal with people. And I think maybe if we'd taken more selfies, then we would have been much more successful. But our relationships are very important with people. A lot of the time, you know, it's a very professional relationship, particularly in all situations. But certainly when you're doing something like a film, it's very sort of pressured and you're trying to work with somebody. And the last thing they want is you sort of dribbling around them and sort of, you know, saying, oh, well, you know, going all a bit girly and googly eyed because you're a big fan of theirs. It's to, you know, to be there to help them get on with them.
So why the book, Timothy? Why did you decide to put this all down on paper?
Yeah, exactly why. Well, it wasn't really planned. A friend of mine, Pete, who has a Tailors with Love podcast, often interviewed us. He's written the books on Bond and is always fascinated about film. So occasionally he'd ring me up. And unfortunately, I tend to go off at a tangent. And he then rang me up one day and said, look, I think there's some fun stories here. Why don't we put it down? And I said, well, I won't tell you what I said, but I didn't think so. I said, I don't think it'll be interesting. I said, if we did publish a book, it'd probably be in the top 10 list, maybe Insomnia Weekly's best read. But I do remember my wife many years ago. We had a very, very big year when we were doing the Oscars. We were doing the Olympic Company, loads of different things. We were doing ice, beautiful.
Yeah, you're just dropping out a bit. Can you just say that again, Timothy? Sorry, I just lost. I got.
See, I got you. Have you got me again?
Right, fine. Yeah, sorry about that, Timothy. Yeah, we got as far as the Olympics, and then I lost that whole swathe.
Yeah, so it was a big year. So we did various things like the Olympics, the Oscars. I became a board director for a PLC company. I think we were working on Eyes Wide Shut, doing too many things. And my wife said, fill out the diary. And of course, I come to the 31st of December, and there's bugger all in the diary. So this is an opportunity to put things down. And again, you know, when we're talking about, you know, Oswald Boateng and Paul Smith, Tommy Nutter, loads of things, I think it's important to write down our journey that might inspire other people, because hopefully it is. That's why we said Boy Wanted. I was a kid working for an uncle on a wet sort of Wednesday in April. Did I think I'd be on a radio show talking? I think it's a sort of journey from somebody who started, you know, from the beginning and went all the way through, really.
What do you hope that people will learn from the book? Is it that journey? Is it the fact that you don't have to have great connections and you don't have to have a university degree to get into any business, but this business in particular, it's not elitist?
Well, in my industry, no, you don't have to have a university degree. And I think it's all about hard work. A lot of people think it's just very easy. You just sort of start doing stuff. I mean, I was very lucky when I was at Tommy Nutter to work with John Galliano, who was on placement from St. Martin's, who went on, you know, to Givenchy Dior, his own career now with Martin Margiela. But John not only was flamboyant and a great designer, but he was a very hard worker. Mm. And then when my first student was Hussein Chalayan, who was the guy who buried all the clothes for Bjerk and iron filings in his garden. And again, very hard working. But he introduced me to a friend who wanted to work with me. And I said, well, what do you want to do? Because she was pretty lazy. She said, I want to do what you did, Tim. And I said, what's that? She said, you just talk to people. And I said, well, it's a bit more than that. And the last thing I knew, this is many years ago, she was selling tequila shots in a bar. She didn't get very far. So hard work's one thing. Also be respectful of people. And most importantly, be yourself. I think the times where we've gone wrong is where people say, oh, you should be like that brand or you should be like that. And we're not. We are who we are. And I think that's very, very important.
And a final word, because I'm sitting in a studio in southern Spain, as I said, not far from Marbella, Puerto Banús. And when I moved over here in 1985, I was a goth, believe it or not, with the full velvet, the boots, the whole thing on studs.
I can imagine it.
You can see it now, can't you, with the hairspray, right?
Okay.
And of course, on my first bus ride to my first party in Spain, I almost passed out because southern Spain the Mediterranean isn't good for goths, because obviously the heavy velvet and the diamante and everything would muck you up. So what's your advice for the person who wants to look a little bit different on the Mediterranean shores this summer, Timothy, please?
Well, on the Mediterranean, I'll just tell you a funny story and then I'll go back to that. So we had an event the other night and a friend of mine, BJ Cunningham, who started Death Cigarettes many years ago, turned up in the outfit that we made for him. And it's a good expression of individuality and also what you wouldn't wear, actually, on the Riviera or down on Bugswater Banús. But he basically, I interviewed him and he reminded me what I asked him, all questions about what mode of transport, and he had a motorbike and he was trying to grow a quip, although he was losing his hair. He won't thank me for that. And what music he listened to. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm trying to raise $2 million to get this cigarette company off the ground. He said, but I'm not a suit wearer. What do I wear? So I said, well, we'll make something that looks, the Japanese call the V-zone, which is your face, sort of this sort of section around your neck. We'll make you look like a normal businessman, but we'll make you look like BJ. And he said, how's that going to come together? Well, I said, well, talking to you, you sound like an Edwardian gunslinger. Why don't we make you look like that? So we made this kind of like frock coat. It's kind of goth looking, actually. Kind of a three-piece suit. I made the waistcoat a little bit too short, so his sort of silver and turquoise cowboy belt buckle would poke out. I got him to wear his worst cowboy boots and motorcycle boots. And he rang me up afterwards, and he said, when I sat in the meeting, they thought I was a businessman. And then when they stood up, they said, hey, you're BJ. And he said, I got the money. Anyway, that's the sort of thing we do with individuality. But going back to what I said earlier, if you are this summer, I think wear things a little bit easier, wear something a little bit more fluid. I mean, if you are somewhere as where you are, which is really nice, you're going out in the evening, wear a slightly higher-waisted trouser, maybe with a simple pleat, maybe a simple loaf, and don't have to wear a sock. Nice shirt tucked in, rolled-up sleeves, sort of that sort of bowling shirt can look very nice as well. Just very, very simple. a nice watch, and hopefully a good tan and a smile.
And I just like the idea that that soft tailoring from American Gigolo is coming back in, and it's, so it's not all shoulder pads and hair gel as well. A sort of soft 80s revival.
Yeah, it is. I think that the important thing is not to do it literally, is it? So basically, we're doing a lot of soft tailoring, but you're not seeing that kind of, you know, I mean, a friend of mine, I went, I was his model. He went for a job at a very famous hair salon, and he put so much dressing in my hair gel. I can remember the owner saying, do you normally put this much in? And also my hair was sort of cracking. He was just putting the comb into my hair. It was just overdressed. But I think that the whole thing is about being comfortable. You know, that's the important thing at the moment. Color is also very strong at the moment. We're seeing that. And we're seeing pattern a lot as well, particularly on sort of shirting and accessories.
And are you confident for the new generation that's coming through as well? Because obviously, with all this exposure, if you like, of British style on TV and in films and in style magazines, it's inspiring a new generation. Is the British fashion scene, do you think, in your section of it, in good health?
Yeah, it is in good health, and it's very interesting. We're on Chilton Street now by the Firehouse, which is actually very, very interesting, and it's having a real moment. It's kind of like the new Chelsea at the moment. We've got a younger to get to certain, and I'd say sort of mid to late 20s to early 30s. And they really enjoy coming in the shop, and they really enjoy shopping. Shopping used to be you go out with no agenda, or you had an idea, I need some new clothes. You wander in somewhere, you get some great service, and you find things that you hadn't thought about, and they put a look together for you. That's kind of really how it used to be. And so this generation, I'm trying to work out why they're really sort of giving themselves over to people like ourselves in a very positive way. And I thought, maybe is it because they go to pop-up experiences? Maybe your listeners can answer that question. They're into actually more interesting things. And also, they're not sort of just spending money. I mean, we're in difficult times at the moment. So everything is an investment, even if it's a baseball cap from us or a T-shirt. People are taking the time to consider it. So they want to come and look at it, try it on. And I think a lot of them are also a little bit fed up of buying certainly expensive items online, commodity items like T-shirts, things like that. You know what it is. You want to buy a few more of those. But when you're buying a high-ticket item, to get something that, A, doesn't look like it is on the image on the website, then it doesn't fit. Then you've got to send it back. It gets really, really boring. And we're hearing that more and more from a younger generation. And yes, they are very inspired still by British look, but we have to understand what looks are going on around the world. Because as I said earlier, the only way to be yourself is to be individual. So it's my job to prescribe the look for that person and for that occasion that really expresses themselves.
The book is called Boy Wanted on Savile Row. It is by Timothy Everest. Timothy, if people want to find you online, they're going to shop online, but where can they find you? Where can they find
we
you?
We do have an offer. It says me contradicting myself. Yeah. If you go to greyflannel.co.uk, greyflannel.co.uk, you'll find us there.
The book is called Boy Wanted on Savile Row. It's by Timothy Everest. Timothy, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, I'm sorry for cutting in and out there and not switching on the video until the very last minute.
We made it.
But now I can see you as a goth.
Exactly. You can see me as a goth, and there you go. And that will get the listeners scurrying to their dials on their radio sets and their cars. Timothy Everest, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. Cheers.